Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello from somewhere in Middle America, where we're getting a bit of a reprieve from those hot, balmy temperatures. Expecting some showers tonight, so hopefully we'll get through the show before you hear thunder. I'm in the sunroom tonight, so you might hear some cicadas in the background. But in any case, thank you and welcome to the show tonight. I've had a really hard week, but I'm excited to have my guest. We've talked a couple of times, and I'm so interested in what she's doing. But first, for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. The front portion of the show is always a featured guest or guests, and the back part of the show is open mic, where you can talk about what's on your heart and mind, interspersed with some great indie music sure to inspire. And I have a new one for you later tonight, so you can look forward to that. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, with a bit of a frog in my throat, apparently. But again, welcome. Now, back to my guest. One of the things that got me very excited about Cynthia, and besides having a couple of nice conversations with her, is that a lot of us have issues when it comes, well, first of all, knowing about different treatment modalities. And you know, you hear a lot of those here on my show, but there are a lot in the brain injury community who have mobility issues, can't get around, maybe don't want to get around. So this is not only a different treatment modality, but a different way to access that treatment. And I just, when I first heard, I was really excited about it because I thought a lot of people who aren't able to get help may well be able to get that help now. So my guest, Cynthia Lackner, MA, is a psychotherapist in private practice who works one-on-one with people on the phone and on Skype. She specializes in emotional brain training, an evidence-based program that pairs neuroscience with skills and tools. EBT teaches a person to rewire his or her brain to diminish anger, sadness, and fear in as few as 3 to 6 sessions. 90% of all human suffering and disease is now caused by stress. 3 out of 4 visits to the doctor are stress-related. Ms. Lackner addresses brain injuries, addictions, relationship issues, burnout, anxiety, depression, and emotional eating. Stress is an underlying component to all of these issues. In addition to being a therapist, she has created and co-produced a documentary for PBS addressing dating violence called Respect Me. This documentary was submitted for an Emmy. Cynthia has worked extensively with both male and female domestic abuse victims. Cynthia teaches others how to have a life full of possibilities, even with brain injuries. Her website is cynthialackner.com. I'll be mentioning that several times throughout the show. I will type it in the chat. And as always, it's in my program notes. So if you clicked on a link out there somewhere in cyberspace, just look at the program notes and you will find Cindy's website there. And with that, I am going to bring on Cynthia Lackner. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kim. I'm really happy to be with you tonight.
And I'm really happy to have you here tonight. You heard what I was saying earlier, and you know, I was thinking about it today, and I don't want to go into the details of that right now. I got a show to get through, but you know, I was thinking that there's some days you don't even feel like leaving the house, where you wouldn't mind the benefit of a professional, you know, or getting some help or support. And I think that happens a lot, whether we have a mobility issue or many in our community have seizures and they're unable to drive, or some other residual that makes them unable to drive. And so you really, we're going to talk about a little later in the show, offers some alternatives for people to be able to access the kind of help that we'll be talking about that you make available in a way that is easier than calling Uber, let's put it that way, and safer,
right. Safer
in most cases than calling Uber. But why don't you give us, I always start with getting a little bit of background so that the listeners know who we're talking to, a little bit of background on yourself, up to and including what got you interested in the brain injury community. I know that you work in a lot of communities, but you do a lot of work in the brain injury community. And I guess I'll keep rattling on for one second. We find in our community that there are so many traditional medical professionals that really don't seem to know very much about brain injury, that when someone has dedicated a large portion of their practice to focusing on that, it's always a pleasant surprise and pleasure to know that someone has been willing to go down that road to help us. So maybe a little bit of backstory on that in your history.
Okay, very well. So first of all, as you know, you got a background about me. I think sometimes for all of us, we have to go through trauma ourselves to be able to say, how can I get through this? How can I not let this horrible situation define who I am? And in my situation, I went through a horrific divorce, and I felt diminished as a person. And in a way, I'm grateful that happened. I never thought I'd say that, but I'm grateful because I feel like it helps me be a better clinician. I have had some unspeakable, painful things happen to me in my life. So if everything had gone so great and I read everything in a book, I don't think I'd be that helpful to anyone, including myself. So because I went through a very painful divorce, I was even taking Xanax, which is a very dangerous benzo that a doctor had prescribed for me. I was losing weight and disappearing. And all of that happened, and a very close friend of mine recommended that I try emotional brain training. And I loved it so much, Kim. I thought, how can I end up using this in my practice? And she grandfathered me in because I don't have a PhD and I don't have an MD, but I was able to learn the skills and tools. And I can honestly tell you it saved my life. So I'm coming from that perspective. And because it's emotional brain training, I had to read all kinds of books on the brain. And I really discovered that there's so much we can do now with the brain. And that's where I got excited about brain science and neuroplasticity. We didn't even know that we could have this capability to make changes in the brain. And so this is a population, people with brain injuries, that is near and dear to my heart because more and more of my clients that struggle with so many issues have made it just a real interest of mine. So that's why I'm so grateful to be able to speak to you tonight about these specific issues that people have and the modality itself.
Well, that's, and you're right. There's a lot of credibility in having gone down a road of experiencing trauma yourself to be able to have that relatability and the compassion to validate others who are going through things. I think I might have been telling you about a therapist, well, actually a psychiatrist that I met and had occasion to do some visiting with, and I made a comment to a second one that I had known who was very demonstrative and had a lot of inflection in his voice, and he was emotional and talked with his hands. And I said, yeah, I said, this guy, I said, you got to check his pulse and see if he's with you when you go in. It's almost creepy. And he said, yeah, that whole generation went through a method of training, a flat affect method of training. And I said, well, he must have excelled in that course, you know, because you would have no hint that he of any personal experience or background or anything, you know, as far as relatability and validation, just kind of a, I don't know, they don't smoke a pipe anymore, but a sitting back kind of Freudian, you know, which has never really done a lot of us any good unless we're strictly there to dump the emotional trash. But that leaves a hole and doesn't give us something to fill it or tools as we move forward to mitigate that accumulation of emotional trash and stress. And another reason why I'm excited when I hear about programs like this that actually give you tools to work with when you walk out, because otherwise what do? The bucket gets filled with emotional trash and stress again because you haven't learned new ways of coping, I guess. And so
that's right.
This is wonderful.
So
let's talk about the individual. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So you know how everybody, it seems these days, have, you know, generalized anxiety, just people walking around in the world and they haven't had brain injuries. Many of them do. I saw statistics that we're the most stressed out country in the whole world, and there's no doubt about that. So after injury, a brain injury survivor and their families often experience a variety of strong feelings and emotions. People feel frustration and anger. A lot of shame comes up and sadness about the changes that have occurred and what will happen in their future. So many of their thoughts are fear-based, like, what's going to happen to me? And some people feel like they're on a roller coaster and they feel misunderstood. That's very common. And there's strong negative emotions, and that can weaken a person's ability to solve problems and handle challenges effectively and even get along with others. So when they meet me, I talk to them about that there's five brain states, and I have them fill out some paperwork. Nothing's very difficult, but just like, how have you been feeling in the last month or so? How often are you stressed? And on a 1 to 5. And from there, I have them fill out a brain map, and then they have an opportunity to circle in terms of, for example, what they do when they get really stressed. often people circle food or alcohol or the internet or you're staying busy or overthinking or anxiety or depression. So many of those emotions. And then often if there's food addiction, sometimes there's even an alcohol addiction with some people that have struggled with brain injury. They might have had an addiction presently, and then they have an injury, and now on the other side of it, they still have that addiction. For some people who have an injury, they get so upset and depressed on the other side and feel hopeless. Then the addiction really kicks in, let's say, for example, alcohol addiction, because they really feel scared and it's something that they can get, or some of them have food addictions. So I have to deal with addictions. I deal with their emotions, and I teach them the skills and tools that they can learn to do for themselves. That's why it's really basically 3 to 6 times that they work with me. I work myself out of a job, because if they can learn the skills and tools and keep practicing them, then they can learn them for themselves. Different than what you were saying with that psychiatrist with the pipe and the stereotype of the old psychiatrist that is saying, this is very different because it's interactive and I'm really helping them with something that's really upsetting them. And then we do the different skills so that they can get to the other side of that anger, get to the other side of that sadness, that shame, that anxiety, that depression. And when they can get rid of that, they can feel gratitude and hope and happiness and pride and security. And that bumps up their set point, and they can go from there and deal with everything that's coming their way.
Yes. Now, for the sake of the listeners out there, you wonder why a person who's maybe faced their mortality with whatever type of brain injury they've been faced with, be it an ABI, TBI, stroke, tumor, whatever it might be, how shame and guilt and those negative emotions would come in, because theoretically we should be extremely grateful that our lives were spared and we have another opportunity up at bat, if you will. But I know, at least in a lot of the cases I've heard, I mean, isn't it an interesting, I find it a very interesting dynamic that you could feel ashamed of something that you couldn't help. You know, you didn't anticipate it happening. You didn't want it to happen. Yet you still feel shame and guilt. In my case, a lot of times it's because I can't deliver on things that I would like to be able to deliver on that I could before, because I either suffering from neuro fatigue or that depression or things that people who aren't going down that road say, well, you know, everybody feels down sometimes. Everybody gets headaches. You know, everybody goes through this or I go through this. And, but it isn't, you can't possibly know anybody's story and dynamics unless you've traveled that road. But I find it interesting that those negative emotions, depression I get, because you're going through the grieving process. You've lost an old life and are looking at building a new life, and how the hell do I do that? They don't give me a handbook, or you know, the caregivers, the loved ones, nobody gets a handbook when they walk out of this thing to know what direction to go. So definitely the fear, that's very relatable, and the depression because of the natural grief process that would come through. But I think people are really surprised at the shame and guilt that they experience, and that others, and we're going to talk about relationships earlier. We're talking about the individuals. I mean, later we're talking about the individuals now, that is a surprise, I think, to many of us, that those feelings come up.
Well, absolutely, Kim. And I think to speak to what your point was about the shame and even some guilt comes in, is because when someone has a brain injury, when somebody looks at them, they can't always tell that that's the case. You know, if I break my leg and I'm wearing a cast, you get, oh, Cynthia, her leg's broken. But when something is going on inside, then you can't wear a sign, hey, I've had a brain injury. You know, just be careful with me, be gentle with me. So right away, there's that shame. And the people I work with, they say to me often, nobody understands what I'm going through, or they just don't understand who I am now. And the shame comes in because, let's say, cognitively, you were so different before, and now it takes so much to process, you know, different thoughts and even simplistic things. And then you get angry with yourself and you get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so the worry comes from that. What's somebody going to think of me? And they don't understand me. And I don't know where to turn for help. And I can't hide my feelings like I used to. And so many things comes up. It's just like, it's almost like a volcano. So it's hard for those people with brain injuries to even be around other people, especially even the people that remembered them for who they used to be. It's a constant reminder. So if they're with people they've never been with, there's shame. And if they're with people that they know so well, there's shame. So any more than you can control when you blink, you cannot control when you feel shame. It just comes up and it feels horrible. And so that's something that is a huge emotion that I can help people deal with. Shame, guilt, they're, as you say, it's nothing that someone did. It happens, but that comes from a different part of the brain. The prefrontal cortex, which is the top part of your brain, which does all the analyzing, planning, and deciding, that's where you can say, hey, it's me. I'm different, but I'm going to be okay. But it's the emotional brain, that's the limbic brain behind the eyes. That's the part that says, oh my gosh, somebody's judging me and they think I'm stupid, or they don't know what's wrong, or they're looking at me funny. So it comes from a different part of the brain, and that's where the confusion comes in.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. The EBT, just in brief, I don't want you to give the program away, but we talk about the fact that they're coping tools. Now, I experienced a treatment modality, I think I talked to you about, called DBT, and that was a 4-module program. And then, of course, we also talked about these addictions, which you're right, with in the brain injury community, an addiction of some sort could have led to the brain injury. It might manifest during with the prescription drugs, or after with either the prescription drugs and or mixing with illicit drugs or alcohol, as you say. And addictions are very swappable. If you've got an addictive personality, it can switch from shopping to the internet to the alcohol to whatever. I mean, there's just a list a mile long. I think I heard once there's 132 different places that have written to the main office in New York of AA to borrow their 12 steps. You've got your Gamblers Anonymous and Eaters and Sex and Emotions and 135 of those. And I understand that you are a believer in the 12 steps, but that we both agreed that that's a foundation track to run on that gives us the clarity we need to go out and seek adjunct tools as another arrow in our quiver of recovery to reach for, on a daily basis, but to continue growing and not get stuck or go backwards.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, I'm all for the 12-step program, and I know it's in, as you said, the, you know, the eating program and gambling and alcohol and so on. I just feel like if you can have another tool in your toolbox, So for people that go to AA and they might go to those meetings every day, when you know emotional brain training, and Kim, there's only five different skills to learn, five. The main ones that I go over to people is called damage control. That's when you're in brain state five, that reptilian brain, when you get really bad news or were in a car accident or found out someone died or had the brain injury or whatever. But it could be something else. It could be where you just feel like, oh my gosh, I'm in traffic and I'm going to be late for my appointment, or, oh my gosh, I forgot to go to the doctor's appointment. I know it was at 10 o'clock and I thought of it at 9:30, you know, the night before, and I didn't go, or whatever. You can all go into that five brain state. So I teach people what to do when they're in that reptilian brain, then to do what's called a cycle. I'm saying C-Y-C-L-E, where you access your emotions of the anger, sad, fear, guilt, shame. And then you have something called a grind-in, so that you can look at what your cycle was and feel better about it, and then have a 3 or 4 word sentence that you could even put on a sticky that you could put on your mirror or in your, you know, in your car or whatever, or in your wallet, to something you can say over and over to feel good about and to calm yourself down. And what I'm saying is the AA meetings you have to get in the car and drive to, this is something you can do in your home. You can do it 10 times a day if you want to. You can say, what brain state am I in? And you learn the different tools, and you can do it for yourself so that you can go from being in a 5 brain state to a 2 or 1, where you feel calm and a sense of peace, and you can calm yourself down without any external solutions, which would be like alcohol or pot or any other drugs or porn or the internet or whatever.
Right. And I think it's worth mentioning, and you're the expert, not me, but I find it stressful. We were talking about stress being the most stressful nation. There's a million reasons for the stress, but to me, dealing with negative emotions is extremely stressful.
It
causal.
Is. Right. Right. So I'm glad you brought that up, because sometimes people say to me, if I don't have a negative emotion and I just stuff it, I'll be okay. Well, what worries me is that if you stuff it, that means it goes somewhere in your body and it's going to cause chaos. So I would rather have you access that emotion, because there's probably a huge amount of anger, especially if you have a brain injury, and rightfully so, where you can say, I'm angry that, and you say it the way I'm saying it, and you might have 3 or 4 things that are upsetting you. And then I'm sad that, I'm afraid that, I'm guilty that. Now you can say, well, those are all negative emotions. Exactly. Let's get them out so that they don't stay in your body. And you do them over and over, because, Kim, even if you don't get them out, when I say get them out, I'm saying say them out loud, then they stay in your body and really cause havoc. You could get a migraine. You could have stomach ache. You could end up with colitis. I know people, stress can cause diabetes. It can cause cancer, all kinds of problems. Stress is the number one cause of illness and disease. The American Medical Association has finally identified that. So if we know that now, if we don't get those negative emotions out, it will stay in our body. So that's a tool to get rid of them. And it's as if you're in a canoe and a little bit of water comes in, and if you don't keep scooping the water out, guess what happens, right? The water goes up over your head. Same with negative emotions. You stuff them, and you might drown in them.
Absolutely. I think that's so interesting, because the first thing you hear a lot of times, without the adjunct tools to work with that you're talking about, is get plenty of rest and limit the stress in your life. Really? You know, how do you do that? You know, just about waking up in the morning is stressful sometimes, for God's sake. You know, I mean, you hear that thrown out on the table so often. You know, just limit the stress in your life. And, you know, that easier said when it's so prevalent in our society, our community, our individual lives. You know, there's a cascade effect all the way out from the core surrounding us everywhere we go. It's almost like electricity in the air. And so to have that just tossed out, okay, I'll do that. I think I'll do that. I've been stressed out for a long time. And yeah, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. I think I'll just stop that. You know, that's the most ridiculous, unreasonable thing that I hear out of so many people so many times. So it's great to have these. And five tools, that's a doable deal. That's not even an overwhelming amount of material to go through. Let's talk a little bit. Well, if there's more you'd like to say about the individual, go ahead and do that. And then let's kind of integrate it into relationships, because that is one of the things that suffer when people have a brain injury or they have those stressors in their life that affect their behavior. Those can compromise relationships. And that, you know, I think finances and relationships are a couple of the things that really undo people in general, really, and specifically in this community where you might be slower processing on all of those things or get more apathetic on those things because you've got other things on your mind, like those physical conditions you talked about. I meant to make a comment on that it's not just the emotion. The emotion feeds the beast of the physical conditions. Yes. And so there's a lot of people in the brain injury community that suffer from chronic pain conditions. And you brought up migraines. That's a huge, huge one. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of people, I was surprised, you know, they had brain injuries, but they're getting diagnosed with things like fibromyalgia, whether that's the real diagnosis or not, they get it. But, you know, anything from chronic pain to the more serious diseases like you were talking about, and all of those things, or anything that affects the individual affects the loved ones around them.
Absolutely, Kim. So what I like to do is start with the individual, and naturally it really spills over if they're married. Often after brain injury, their divorce can happen because there's a lot of arguing, a lot of blaming, a lot of guilt. And so I also work with couples. I've worked with whole families. You know, as you know, when there's a brain injury, it impacts the whole family. So I've done that as well. And so mostly with the individuals, if they have the brain injury and I can help them with tools to help them manage their emotions, it will help them with the physical that we just spoke about. And plus it helps them get along better. If they're still able to hold a job, it helps them manage the stress from work if they're still able to do that. Now, some of them don't have jobs anymore because, as you know, cognitively they couldn't manage that job, which is just so sad. But I really, really am disappointed for them when they can't keep a marriage going or keep a family going together, because I want to be there to help them with the support and what that looks like. Yes, we have to understand that dad or mom isn't that same person, or a teenager or a child. They're not the same, but we need to learn these skills and tools together to be there as a team to help them going forward, not adversarial, not shame and blame. That isn't going to get anybody anywhere. So that's why I do like to work with couples as well, so that they understand what's going on for the person with the brain injury and then go forward with a life that they have to accept. I mean, that is part of the sadness. In my work of EBT, it's called essential pain, the pain of life, of understanding this is how it is, and then just moving forward with it. When we don't accept things, it makes it so much harder to try and have a good day. because we use all our energy fighting that. And it's also our unmet expectations that keep us upset. And that's true with people that don't have brain injuries. So for people who do have brain injuries, it's magnified.
Yes. And those are very good points, because so many people are stuck at the level of not being able to come to acceptance. They still think they have control over other people, mm-hmm. places, and things. And the best we ever have is the illusion control. We are never really in control of anything.
True.
We can take part, you know, we can add to by trying to move down a positive path. But at the end of the day, you know, our best plan to control a situation can evaporate pretty quickly if other people, places, and things don't cooperate. And then that resentment and bitterness, sadness occur, and those are stressors that again feed all of the things that we were talking about that lead to emotional issues as well as physical issues. Tough proposition.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Then did you want to move into the relational part of it? So what happens when a couple or a family has been going down the road and everybody's got their roles? Let's maybe talk about that for just a minute. The dynamic in any relationship, people take on the roles that they have, and they get in that groove of the role that they're supposed to play in the family unit, the marriage unit, whatever it might be, the workplace. And then something changes, a brain injury happens, or a game-changing event like you were talking about happens. And the first thing, in my observation, is it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle that had been put together neatly in place, where everybody knew where they belonged and what they were supposed to do and how to do it. And somebody coming through and just knocking all the pieces on the floor and they go flying. People aren't sure of themselves. They're not sure of the other people in the dynamic, and individually and as a group. And then are lost as to, oh my God, you know, my old role that I was comfortable with isn't working for me anymore. And fighting that and trying to bend things back to the way they were is like swimming against the current or pushing a boulder up the mountain. So much time is wasted, and so many feelings are burned following that particular path, because a change in the roles happens, and the quicker people accept that and are willing to move forward into learning what the new roles are, I think the quicker one can come to terms with getting help and having the ability to remember to use tools like you're talking about in the EBT.
Exactly. So let's say a couple is working with me, and as we said earlier, I can work with people on Skype and FaceTime, you know, and it depends. I know you also have this program going out to people in different countries, so that is a different challenge, but it just, and we could talk about that in a little bit. But even if people are working with me on Skype or on FaceTime, what I do is we don't mince any words here. I have them do where, let's say the husband has a brain injury. The wife says, I'm angry that you have this brain injury. I'm sad that you're not the husband that I remember. Or, I mean, it sounds brutal, but this is what people are thinking anyway. I'm afraid what our future looks like. I'm guilty that I feel this way. I'm giving examples. But I have her say, and what do you still see here? And she focuses on all the things she still loves about her husband. And, I mean, it brings tears to my eyes just even describing it, because, yes, it can sound really negative at first, but then I have them focus. So whatever you focus on becomes bigger. And I want them to get, as you called it earlier, emotional trash out of the way, but then focus on all the wonderful things that she, for example, still sees in her husband, and that she still believes they can move on together. And then the husband can say, I'm angry that I have this brain injury, and I'm sad that this happened to me, and I'm afraid what this means for our future and our finances. By people saying what they feel, okay, let's get about it. Because otherwise, if everybody tiptoes around it, it just stays stuck. And that's how people get sick. I would rather have them say what they feel, they love each other, and focus on what does this life look like and how do we go forward with everything possible? How do we do it together? It's so scary to think you're doing it by yourself. Somebody's biggest fear is to think that they're going to be, you know, left, that there's going to be a divorce. So let's get to this before anybody's thinking about that. And I think people do get divorced because they didn't have the skills and tools to just go forward, so they just gave up.
I'm going to say another thing that goes along with that, I think, is choice. A lot of people think mm-hmm. that they've been dealt a hand that leaves them no choices. Now, what you just explained, mm-hmm. of you can focus on what changed and what's wrong that drives you crazy, mm-hmm. or you can look at the positive that's still salvageable, endearing, whatever it is, that you do have a choice yeah. on what you choose yeah. to focus on. A lot of people don't know that.
Right, right. Right, and whatever is positive that you build on becomes really big. It becomes bigger. If we just talk about the negative, that's what becomes bigger. So that part, that's why I like to facilitate it, because I give them the skills and tools. And then I want them to practice that together throughout the day. And then they just feel mm-hmm. closer and closer and feel like they have more going for them. They might even feel like their marriage is stronger now because they didn't have these skills and tools earlier.
Good point. Good point. They don't give a rule book for that either, I noticed, when you get married.
Don't.
You know? Well, I mean, they right. have those vows, but I've seen a lot of it lately, whether mm-hmm. it's tied to an illness or tied to life in general. And that's just that it's pretty easy on what's supposed to be the happiest day of your life to stand there and spit out those vows, but when they're put to the test suddenly down the road a piece, it doesn't wind up working out, like the sickness and health part. You know, we all say
right.
that in sickness and health part on that day, and on that day, you know, we're not thinking about the impact of sickness. We wish for only health, and if it's a sickness, we hope it's pneumonia or something
mm-hmm.
that passed, the broken arm you were talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kind of things, that permanent change in the dynamic
right.
and the roles of the relationship. And so, you know, that's when the rubber really meets the road, I think. And if people don't have some skills to work with, then you're almost beaten before you got out of the gate.
Right. Exactly. Absolutely. So, yeah, so that's why I can work with whole families like that, or husband and wife, or husband and, you know, partner, or, you know, and again, I worry about the caregivers. You and I spoke about that the other day. A lot of times everybody thinks also about the brain injury victims, and the caregivers are the ones that sometimes don't take care of themselves, and they feel like it's always about the person that isn't well. And, you know, that's why they talk about oxygen on a plane, put it on you first before the little ones or the sick ones. And that's another thing that I think is so wonderful about emotional brain training, Your job is to ask yourself, how do I feel and what do I need, whether you're the caregiver or the person with a brain injury. And you have to be mindful of your needs so that you can help yourself thrive and you can help your partner thrive.
Right. And some of those things are not something someone else can do for us. Those
mm-hmm.
are things that we have to work out ourselves. It'd be nice if someone could just, I mean, you're giving the tools, but unless we work them,
yes,
then they're not very fruitful. You know, somebody could give
right.
us the answers to the key to life, but if we don't
right.
work it and we fight it, then it doesn't benefit us. So it's
right.
like an exercise, a mental exercise, you know, like physical exercise, that if you do it for a while and then you stop. I make a joke that's not so funny about having had a treadmill for every decade of my life that's wound up becoming a clothes hanger, you know, something I throw the clothes over, and it's, you know, expensive, and then those things are so damn heavy, they weigh as much as a Volkswagen,
mm-hmm.
and you can't hardly give those away to get somebody to come and pick
right.
them up from your basement of all places. You know, please, I'm giving this
mm-hmm.
away free. You know, it's the third decade. And,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, you really have to work it.
You do, Kim. And here's
here's the
difference. So because people know that there's different kinds of therapy. Here's what's different about emotional brain training. It teaches people how to rewire their own limbic brain. And this is really important, especially if you are somebody that has a brain injury. This is something that you can do for yourself so that you can rewire if something triggers you, the certain stress that you have from something that has happened to you, either the injury or an argument you're having with your spouse or your child or your boss or whatever, you can rewire that. And the more you do it, the better you feel. And there's something so magical about knowing that it's up to you. You can do it. It's not in a bottle. It's not a pill that you're going to take that's going to make everything okay. No, you're the one that's going to do it. And it's empowering. And it gives you a whole different understanding of what your life can look like. And it makes you feel like, I really can have a different kind of life. Maybe in some ways different than I ever imagined, because I'm in charge of how I feel. And if I'm in charge of how I feel, then I can move forward with possibilities. And that is huge for someone, especially with a brain injury.
Very much. It's very empowering because you feel like you've been demasculated if you're a guy. I'm not sure what
mm-hmm.
that word is
mm-hmm.
for a woman, but you understand what I mean. And when you get to what
mm-hmm.
you're talking about, that feeling of empowerment gives you more energy. The depression and the negative emotions suck you dry with energy and fatigue, where the antithesis of that, what you're talking about, feeds the empowerment and the confidence, which gives you more
mm-hmm.
energy to move
mm-hmm.
forward. And no one says that any of that is easy. It takes practice,
no.
but
right.
it helps to first have the acceptance and second have the tools so that,
right.
you know, you're not flying blind out there.
Right. Right. Well, I also love that this is something you can do at home and you don't have to drive somewhere, especially because you said earlier a lot of these people can't drive, or, you know, they might have some of that, you know, where they have restrictions, you know, that they can't drive, or they can't drive very far, or they can't this or that. But when they're at home, they can do and practice these skills and tools and become experts in those. They can, the more they do it, the better they get, and they can help themselves feel better. So they go from that reptilian brain to a place where they feel calm and full of possibilities. And that really is, I mean, at least for the clients that I've had, they are so grateful. And one of the other skills also talks about really focusing on gratitude, happiness, feeling secure, feeling proud. Those are all really positive emotions that keep us healthy and strong. And when you really feel those, and those are the ones you feel more than the negative ones, again, there is just, you know, there's limitless possibilities for you.
Yes, absolutely. Now, tell us a little bit about how you decided to establish your practice. And again, for those who might have come in a little bit later, the fact that we can access you by phone or Skype. This isn't something that you have to drive to and be afraid that someone in the waiting room might recognize you and think you're crazy, even though they're there too. Or if you have a mobility issue, or you just don't have the energy to make it to one more appointment of any kind. Before I let you go on with that, I do want to repeat CynthiaLackner.com, CynthiaLackner.com. And that is in my program notes, and I'll be mentioning it again after Cynthia leaves and I'm thanking her at the end of the night. But CynthiaLackner.com is how you get more details on what we've been talking about and also the ability to reach out to her. And we're going to talk about the phone and Skype and individual sessions and the possibility of a small group section if we're still thinking of that.
Yes, absolutely. I'll answer one of your questions first, and then we'll talk about the groups. I really loved emotional brain training, as I said earlier in the program, where I had my own trauma, and I felt like it saved my life, and I love that I could learn how to rewire my own brain. And sometimes people feel despair, and I always say to them, hey, if I can do it, you can do it. And I can pull them up with me. And that's even called mirror neurons, where you can literally, even if I'm on the phone like this with you all, I feel such joy, and I can pull you all up with me where I feel that there is nothing but hope out there. And I mostly because I feel grateful because of, you know, there's so many things that happen to us in life. And again, we need to learn more from those than all the happy things that happen to us. So I feel like emotional brain training is a very, it's a wonderful modality because it really helps people be in the driver's seat of their wellness. It isn't something where they have to drive to someone and continue. Like with me, they learn the skills. And then, as I said, I work myself out of a job. Now, for another option of this, instead of working one-on-one on Skype, let's say, I would be open to working with groups of people. I wouldn't be able to work with more than 10 at a time. And all I would need from them is their email address and their name and their area code, their phone number, and we could figure out, you know, how we could do that. But that's something that we could do 10 at a time, and that way it keeps the price down for some people. They would still get the benefit of the skills and tools. Now, they would be working with other people. It wouldn't be one-on-one, but it would absolutely establish camaraderie, community. It would help diminish their stress, and I think it might be something to consider for some people who would be comfortable working in a group. It's absolutely conducive for that, and for others, they might want to just do the one-on-one where they can just talk to me about their own specific issues, their concerns, and then we work on those, and then they eventually get back to me if they need me again. But after they get really good at learning the skills and tools, they don't need me anymore. So that's an option as well, right? The group or one-on-one or working with couples. As we discussed before, it happens to the whole family. So that's, you know, as you say, Kim, everybody has a role that they played, and now it's a new role. And we have to grieve the role that we don't play anymore. And let's talk about the new role. And instead of looking at it as a negative role, let's look at it as a positive role and just a different role. It doesn't mean it's bad. It's different. And that's okay.
Yes. Now, one thing I can see being an advantage about, you know, one thing sometimes that people don't like about support groups in person, which I think are important, but, you know, you might be, didn't get up quite early enough and you're worried about how you look or how you sound, and that visual of having other people there. There's some very positive aspects to doing a group that way, but I can see flipping that coin the other way, and some of the things that make people feel uncomfortable in face-to-face groups would be advantageous, because they still get the relatability, support, and a lot of the things you get in a face-to-face group. And I'm not saying it should be one or the other, I'm just making a comparison, that one-on-one is great, but if you had a small group, you do get to mirror your own feelings and reactions with that of other people in the same types of situations, yet you're freer. Like, don't you think a lot of people feel freer when they're on the phone saying something than when they're on in person in front of someone saying something? They feel maybe a little more free to be honest and to speak their mind when they're not looking someone in the eye. And I could see where that could be advantageous, both from a support aspect and the other word I just lost, but you know what I mean. So I think that's a cool option.
Yeah, Kim, I have to agree with you 100%. Because I work with people sometimes just like this, like you guys can't see me, but I sometimes feel like some of those sessions are even better, to Kim's point, because somebody really is free to just focus on their, you know, what they're feeling, and they're not distracted by somebody else. And so I sometimes feel that those are the best sessions. And what one of my best skill sets, I feel, is that I can feel what someone else feels in their body. Like, I'll always say to them, where do you feel it in your body? And I'm thinking, wow, I wonder if they're going to say their stomach. And they could say, oh, my stomach's in knots. And I could say, well, that's because that's the vagus nerve. It's the longest nerve in the body. And that's why it gets activated when you get bad news or something, you want to go throw up or you get sick. Can feel it in their chest. They can feel it, you know, in their head. They feel like a migraine coming on. So I feel like some of my best work has been, I couldn't pick the person out in a lineup, and I don't care, because they hear my voice, I hear their voice, and we're doing work together. We're going from one place to another, and I'm pulling them up for hope and power for themselves. And it is empowering for them.
Yes. Well, I think that's just wonderful. So, again, it's CynthiaLackner.com. And do you, obviously people can look up the website, but if they don't happen to have a computer, is there a telephone number or an email?
Absolutely. Yes, please call me. I'm in area code 303-968-4565. That's 303-968-4565. If you want to send me an email, it's Cynthia, CYNTHIA, at CynthiaLackner.com, CYNTHIALACKNER.com. And I will get back to you, and you can let me know, you know, you can write me an email or call me, and you can let me know what some of your issues are. If there was something you heard tonight that resonated with you, let me help you. You don't have to feel this darkness. I feel like I can give you some hope, some real hope, and some skills that you can utilize the rest of your life.
I do too. And again, I really think that call or Skype option has some real advantages to it, not only in the brain injury community, but in the community at large for a lot of the same reasons. And so what a cool way to have, you know, and I think a lot more medicine as we evolve is going to be that way. You know, in the traditional medical model, they're cut down to 15 minutes and we're shoved through the cattle chute. You know, it gives even more time, maybe, you know, to be able to do these Skype, obviously not if it's a hands-on type of thing, but in a lot of ways, the consultations where you might get a lot more out of the consultation than feeling rushed, and you brought up nervous and stressed, which make you not think as clearly because you're in the doctor's office, and it just makes you to be nervous to be there in the first place to be able to have these kinds of consultations. So very cool, forward-thinking way to set up your practice, and what you're doing, the five steps of EBT sound like a godsend, like they're doable. You know, five items is not an overwhelming list, let's put it that way. You know, a lot of things people get into, they'll look at some of these treatment modalities and they're very long term, and it might be 30 to 50 sessions, or it might be a lifetime plan. And 3 to 6 sessions with 5 tools certainly sounds worth exploring. And again, what you want to do if you write to Cynthia at CynthiaLackner.com is ask her if you can get a copy of those papers she has you fill out, and you can get an idea, well, of what she's looking for, you know, the basis for your conversation by the questions she's asking, and she'll send you those sheets. Do you happen to have them in front of you? I'll just keep you a minute more with those.
I
know you told a little bit.
I do.
You told a little bit in the beginning, but again, for people who might have come in late, what kind of things are you asking again on there? You talked about stress level and 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, whatever it would be.
Right.
But there was a couple other things that I'm just not able to reach in my mind, in my memory right now that were great.
Right. So Kim, what I sent you was the brain set point, which just means how much stress you're really dealing with, 1 to 5. 5 meaning, oh my gosh, I can't take this anymore. 1 is like you're sitting on the beach in Hawaii. I'm just making that up as an example. So you learn to start thinking in terms of brain states, 1 to 5. And you can be in all 5 brain states in a day. And that's okay. You just don't want to stay in a 5th brain state, because that's how you get sick. The cortisol runs through you and you have that stress button stuck on. And that's how people get sick. So that's why this is really useful, whether you had a brain injury or not, how to get rid of that sensation and that feeling. But the main thing that I think is the most important is called stress circuits, where I ask people, when you're super stressed, do you actually feel like you can't love, you're not worthy, you feel like you don't have joy, or that you're a bad person, or even that you're almost like invisible, you don't exist? And that's how some people feel when they're really stressed out, all of those bad things. The other thing I'm looking for is the survival circuits. When we don't have what we feel that we need to do to calm ourselves down, to self-soothe, what have some of us done? We reach for the bottle of wine and we're drinking the whole bottle, or that extra martini. Or I work with people that have food addiction, and I had one woman that kept going to the refrigerator for cheesecakes, and she was really, really heavy, and she knew that that wasn't the right thing, but she didn't know what to do instead of. So you can't take external solutions away if you don't have anything to replace it with. I feel emotional brain training, the skills and tools, replace the alcohol and the food and the constant internet. Again, I'm not saying we can't eat. I'm not saying you can't have a glass of wine or something. I'm saying if we're using it to calm us down, that's where we get into trouble. And then there's another section called intimacy blockers. That was another area. So you fill that out. And my favorite part is at the end where I ask you to fill out your top three sources of joy. And somebody might put their family or their animals or music or their husband, their wife, their children, whatever it is. What makes me feel sad is some people don't. They can't fill anything out. I've worked with groups that don't even have brain injuries. And one lady put down Botox. I'm not making this up. So those are the people that I want to help. Yeah, the people that cannot fill out the top three sources of joy. I want those people to tell me, I have so many sources of joy. I want to be able to give you more than three. Or if they're not feeling that in the beginning, hopefully by the time we get finished, they will need more ink in their pen to write down all their sources of joy.
That's just wonderful. So, again, if you reach out to Cynthia, you can get that questionnaire source sheet. And, I was looking at the blocks to intimacy. I did read through all of them last week, but a lot has happened in the last week. But each of those categories deals with both the individual and then how you relate to others. And that'll give you, by seeing those sheets, that's putting a toe in the water to see the kinds of things that you're going to be working on. And then knowing that you can do it by phone or Skype, and that it's five bullet points or tools that will help you learn to cope better and find more joy than sorrow in your life overall, which is not to say that we don't have sorrowful times in our life, but when you said the stress button getting stuck, I kind of feel like that's where I've been at for a while, but that's not a good thing. And so sometimes you need a nudge to get unstuck. You know, sometimes you don't even know you're stuck. And that's why I like the damage control part of what you were talking about, because sometimes when you don't even know you're stuck yet and you're flying on autopilot, you're creating damage to yourself, in relationships, and a lot of other areas that should impact your life in a good way, and it winds up being a negative way, and you don't even realize it's because you're stuck. It's everybody else's fault,
right?
Or circumstances, or reasons, just any other reason, but something that I need to look at.
Right. Absolutely. Great.
Awesome. Well, Cynthia, do you have any closing words for us? I appreciate you coming on so much tonight. This is always timely to have tools, different treatment modalities, and now we're looking at different delivery systems for these treatment modalities that I think are just wonderful. And again, I wanted to congratulate you on your documentary. Dating violence is, it's big news. It's very common. It always has been. But, you know, like alcohol or football, a lot of things people didn't talk about before that are coming into the light, that's been coming into the light. So the fact that you co-produced that documentary and it's been submitted for an Emmy was in addition to all the other things that you're working on, very useful and impressive. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. That was really a long time ago. I did that years ago. And so this just sort of been a metamorphosis. It was dating violence and domestic abuse. And all of those topics have really given me just a plethora of information to help people, because I'm very attuned. If someone has a difficult relationship, I'm always thinking, you know, it sounds like it's not healthy. And I just pull from the different hats I've worn and the experiences I've had. That was a long time ago. So it's true about all of us. Whatever we are today has been everything that we have learned and the experiences we've had. And often it's the pain that we've gone through that is our best teacher and where we've grown the most. And I would say that's absolutely been my case. I've had a PhD in some painful situations, and I feel grateful for it because I'm able to turn it around and say, how can I help someone else with that so that they don't feel that darkness, that abyss? I want to pull them up just like I feel like I was fortunate. I'm resilient. I was able to do it for myself. I want to help those that have some struggles, but I feel like I can definitely help them.
Super. Well, and I think that's true. A lot of people who have been down that road turned it around, and that's one of the ways that they keep positive and empowered is by giving away what was given to or what we worked through to others and having that empathy and compassion to not want others to have to proceed down the same path. There's a lot of people in the survivor community who that's what winds up filling the hole of what they can't go back to is a way to help others by sharing, as I say in the beginning of my show every week, their experience, strength, and hope. And so I very much appreciate you coming on tonight and introducing us to EBT and how we can get some help by phone or Skype. And again, everyone, Cynthia, you can find her website at cynthialackner.com. You can write her at cynthia@cynthialackner.com, or you find her phone number on the website, or you can get that when you write to her. So thank you, Cynthia, for being here tonight. I appreciate it very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Kim.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Kim, for the opportunity. And have a great night, all of you. Okay.
Thanks.
Bye for now.
I hope you'll come back again. Good night, Cynthia.
Oh, absolutely. Good night, Kim. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Okay, everyone, that was Cynthia Lackner, and do check out her Stress-Free Living. Some excellent points made tonight, that's for sure. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back, and my mom read a book lately called God Winks, and I have always thought nothing happens by mistake, that there are no coincidences. I've always said that it's God's way of working anonymously. And now someone's come out and actually written a book and called that same theory, training of thought, God Winks. But however you describe it, if you believe, I've got an interesting piece to share with you after this. But I did have the opportunity to hear from a ministry of all places, and they're traveling around the country. I got a hold of them last week, and I thought this song really resonated with me. This is a band called Jesus Culture that you can find at jesusculture.com, and the song is called Fierce. So I'm going to take a quick break and get some ice for my tea, and maybe you guys take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Before I ever cry,
And that's Jesus Culture. You can find them at jesusculture.com. That's one mistake we make. I'm not telling you how to believe or what to believe, but that it's very important to believe in something, because none of our shoulders are that broad at the end of the day to do it on our own. And that's where a lot of loneliness and polarizing comes in, and that's not helpful for anyone. Today I opened up, as I often read, a meditation for the day, and I opened it up, and I just opened the book randomly, and it happened to open to August 3rd, which is tomorrow. And the reflection for the day: grief can be devastating and debilitating. It can continue to creep into our lives years after the experience which caused it. It can and does appear at the most unexpected and unwanted times. Part of grief is anger and guilt, which seems unacceptable to most of us, whether the pain comes from the loss of a spouse, significant other, pet, job, boss, child, limb, or house, does not matter. The pain is just as strong and seemingly unendurable. Words do not help at these times. We need courage just to breathe and exist. If we can focus on living a moment at a time, strength will eventually come. We cannot let grief prevent us from loving again. It is a part of living which we must all go through. The meditation for today: help me remember that you and time are my best friends in my struggle with grief. And today I will remember it is good to mourn, but there comes a time to get beyond the sorrow and resume a happier life. And I'm going to keep that one in my back pocket, because this past week has held a lot of loss. But I felt that it was really important, excuse me, that frog again, to come here and do the show tonight. I'm not going to be taking any callers, and I'm going to end a little bit earlier, but Cynthia has been booked for a couple of months. She's been a wonderful guest, and I knew that it would do me good to get out of myself and do what I've been groomed to do in my own recovery, and that's to take some time out and try to help others, because the grief and the bad feelings are there waiting for you the minute you want to go back and pick them up. But what we do need always is hope and faith and support and fellowship. So I want to thank you all for being here tonight. Got a great guest next week, excuse me, and booked through the middle of September. And on the 3rd, we've got some exciting things going on in August, a couple of new shows that are going to be starting. The second Thursday will be Concussion Mom, and she's going to be having a show called Concussion Matters, and that means matters of concussion, like post-concussion syndrome, youth advocate, falls in grown-ups, all aspects of concussion. And that is Jamie Uretsky, and her daughter Madeline is going to be co-hosting with her from time to time. Her daughter suffered a concussion and post-concussion syndrome playing soccer, was out of school for a year, had a blinding headache for a couple of years, and then got back into school, is now doing an internship at BU, Boston University, which is the hotbed of brain research and activity, you might have heard about it in the movie Concussion, where Dr. Amalu was Dr. Dukowski. And so what a great opportunity for Madeline, with the condition that she has, that she just happened to get an internship, maybe another one of those winks, at BU in their neurology department. So when she's feeling fatigued, or if she has one of those blinding headaches, they're very knowing and understanding and working well with her. So we'll have both news in neurology as well as the survivor and caregiver aspect. And Jamie has a huge following on her Concussion Mom page. So the second Thursday, that would be next Thursday, right, will be her premiere show. And then the fourth Monday of this month will be the first show from Michael Bear Clare. He was a guest. Both of them have been guests on my show, or you were introduced to them in the last couple of months that they'd be coming up as hosts. Michael Clare was a professional wrestler in WWF, where he broke his neck and ceased that activity. So needless to say, he's an advocate now against contact sports, has a lot to share as far as experience, strength, hope, and science, where that's concerned. But he's also a musician. One of the reasons he couldn't start until October, wonderful guitar player. Hopefully he'll be sharing some of that music on the show. And if that's not enough, he's very active with veterans. One of the veteran groups he's working with now is a group to bring hyperbaric treatments to the VA for our veterans. That's a treatment modality that hasn't been acceptable. We're still on primary treatment pill pelting, and he and a large group of veterans are fighting to get hyperbarics into the VA and at a reduced cost to help support our troops. So I think that's going to be a wonderful show. And on the third Friday, we're actually going to see our founder, Craig, pop back in. We haven't heard him on the radio for months now, unless it's been on a tape that I've played, but it is Brain Injury Radio's 7th anniversary on the air. And for those of you who might be new around here, we stream to all 50 states, 36 countries. All of the live shows are then archived for on-demand listening in your own time. And so those messages are going to be out there. I think we just crossed 2,400 shows in the archives at the beginning of the week, or over the weekend, maybe. I looked up and saw it was just over 2,400 shows. So if you don't think the need for brain injury support and information isn't there, you'd be mistaken. And if you're thinking that you're getting most of that out of the doctor's office, you'd be mistaken. Most of us in this community know that we've learned more from other survivors and the guests that we've had come on who actually specialize in this area, don't guess in this area, and that we've learned more here, well, in my case, than I did the 17 years prior to arriving. I'm blessed that Craig threw me a line when he decided to go 7 nights a week 5 years ago, and I've been an original host here since. But the show itself, he started 7 years ago. And so the third Friday of this month, I hope you can join us for our 7th anniversary party and actually get to hear Craig, who I know a lot of you have missed. So with that, I want to thank you all for being here tonight and hope that you have a great rest of the week. I'm going to close the show in the usual way with something I believe we all have, and that is a guardian angel. Guardian Angels by Leah West, and you can find her at leahwest.com. Or if you feel like doing a good deed and you're a Facebook user, go over to facebook.com/LeahWest and like her. She's a very likable person. And or run over to YouTube, and she's got some fantastic videos. But we go way back. She was my first indie artist. And in fact, a portion of this song was the trailer, went with the trailer to my book, and that led to becoming a radio host. And at that point, I got to actually not literally meet, but talk with Leah and get permission to play her music on the show. So it's kind of come all circle. She was just starting that when I was starting this, and her career has really taken off. And I used to work for big bucks, but now I work for soul bucks, and it's truly given my life a great deal of purpose. So thank you all for being here, and here's Guardian Angel. Good night, and God bless. you